Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and All Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. We are covering a whole lot on this week's episode, and considering that my focus is fully going towards E3, that may be a good thing. I know I've spoken a whole lot on gaming these last few podcasts, but I think this week I'm going to cover other topics that I consider myself an expert at. I'm talking about movies, anime, music, and the world of theater. God, it's been a while since I've gotten to talk about the world of the sage, and I've got a great show I'll be speaking about much later on in the show. But enough rambling, let's get the music going. Remember, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start today's show off with a band that kind of started up my love for Japanese punk. Before I had gotten into Tsushima Miure, before the Blue Hearts, and even before Guitar Wolf, one band opened my eyes to the punk scene in the Land of the Rising Sun, and that was the Spunks. Sadly, they disbanded many years ago, and I fear that their legacy may not shine as bright as they should. In fact, the song I'm about to play comes off of an album that's been long out of print. A shame, considering how great it is. You know, maybe one day someone will re-release it and help showcase how amazing this band was. From Born to be Mild, here are the Spunks with Highway 69.
We'll be right back. I'm
Punishment with Loop Share, coming off of their album Air Feel, Color Swim. I first got into this group through the anime Eden of the East, which they did the ending for. Sadly, the group disbanded 2 years ago, but their vocalist, Yumi Uchimura, has moved on to a new band called La La Larks. This past week, I went to see the new X-Men movie, Days of Future Past. It explores a comic book story arc of what would happen if one of the mutants went back in time and changed things for the better. In film layman's terms, what if you could undo all the other X-Men films from even happening? So it's got the cast from the recent First Class film and some of the characters from the first three X-Men movies, along with a great Peter Dinklage as the man behind the Sentinel program. The humor we've come to expect from Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is still intact, along with some great acting from Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, James McAvoy, and Michael Fassbender as the past and present incarnations of Professor Xavier and Magneto. The real show-stealer comes in the form of Quicksilver, played by Evan Peters, who runs around the screen causing beautiful chaos on those trying to keep Wolverine and gang from saving Magneto. The action sequences are well-produced, but they're never in-your-face like, say, any of the Avengers-based films. That's okay, though, because it's surprisingly the story and the dialogue within the film that keeps the attention of the viewer. One scene in particular involves Xavier digging deep into Wolverine's brain to see the truth. What will happen if the past isn't changed? And the emotional aspect that it brings will leave you dazzled. You truly feel something for these characters, and it becomes a battle not between good and evil, but rather of mutant acceptance against mutant opposition. Years ago, there were a lot of people comparing the treatment of the mutants in the X-Men films to those in the LGBT community, which is something I can totally see in these characters and such. Granted, it's a very extreme comparison, but there are plights that befall those who aren't fully accepted in real-life society in a similar fashion that the mutants face off against. If anything, these films teach viewers to accept who they are and to never let those who may be turned off by their uniqueness to keep them from achieving the greatness they wish to take hold of. This doesn't just focus on the LGBT realm, but those with physical, mental, and even social disabilities. And the X-Men do a fantastic job at showcasing how to overcome these obstacles that try to hold them back. You know, it's funny. Considering how Days of Future Past ends, it makes X3 The Last Stand a more tolerable film. Granted, it's still one of the weaker entries, but with the way the new movie tends to mend the wrongs of Brett Ratner's vision, it no longer should make you groan if you have to sit through a viewing of it. For a film to be able to make a past entry better without having to take away any sort of integrity it tries to build, that's a pretty big accomplishment. All in all, I can give Days of Future Past a nice 4.5 out of 5, and for those who have yet to see it, please do. From then on, all that can be said is, bring on the apocalypse! If you don't know what I mean by that, go and do your X-Men research. Up next, we have our buddies Cuckoo Kangaroo, and for those that may be keeping tabs on this week's episode, the other two English language artists I'll be spinning have had Brian and Neil as their opening act. This song reminds me of my college dorm days. From their new album Whoopty Whoop, which I hope you've all gotten, this is called All I Eat Is Pizza.
Let's go! Single meal. Then I got scurvy.
That sounds pretty real.
I used to eat tacos every single day. But then I had a pizza slice and it blew me away. All I eat is pizza. Not na 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 na. Not na 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 na. All I eat is pizza. Not na 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 na. Time. All the time.
I got cheese on my fingers. I've got cheese on my fingers all the time. Pizza time.
Dinner.
It's pizza time.
3 in the morning.
It's pizza time.
Christmas.
It's pizza time.
Ohio.
It's pizza time.
Oh my gosh, my wife's going into labor. I said every day is pizza time.
Mozzarella.
With Dream Boy from their Bomb the Twist EP. Fans of Kill Bill will recognize this group as the band playing in the House of Blue Leaves, the Tokyo nightclub Oren Ishii is attending when the bride seeks revenge. I wasn't 100% sure if I was going to talk about this next subject, but seeing as I try to report on as much J-pop news as I can, I feel like I cannot stay silent about it. As some of you listeners may know, for the most part, I kinda banned pop idol groups from No Borders, No Race, and one of these groups just so happens to be AKB48. I'm not a really big fan or promoter of these types of groups, as they tend to reach the top of the charts in very dishonest ways. Specifically because a good bunch of their fans like to buy their albums and singles by the box load so as to make sure they hit number one. When I say box load, I mean each fan will purchase boxes of these albums for thousands of dollars, money which could have gone towards like food, shelter, and actual life necessities. In the case of AKB48 fans, I put them in the same tier as the Juggalos here in America. A fan base so terrible, it makes you hate the band they worship. So I bring this up because last week during a handshake event with AKB48, some dickhead came in with a saw and attacked the girls, causing harm to members Rina Kawai and Anna Iriyama, along with a staff member who was trying to protect these girls from this psycho. Now, even though I'm not a fan of the band, it doesn't mean I don't respect the members. You know, far from it, in fact. I know these are good people who are doing something that they really enjoy, and they have a lot of fun performing for other people. And if what you are doing brings much joy to those around you, and it's not causing you or anyone else harm, then there is definitely some good in what you are doing. It's like Boston's hatred towards the Yankees. You know, we don't hate the players, but we sure as hell don't like the franchise. But we know that they, the players, bring much happiness to the fans and some of the even less fortunate that they like to spend time with. Now, for someone to come in and try to cause physical harm to somebody who brings smiles to everyone, that's a pretty unforgivable act. Imagine if someone attempted to hurt Dave Grohl or George Clooney or Amanda Palmer. Hell, we're still pissed at Chris Brown for causing harm to Rihanna. And I can't believe he can walk the streets without getting his ass whooped. AKB48 tries to bring a smile to those who listen, and even though I'm not a fan of them, I can respect what they are trying to do. I mean, not everyone is a fan of Foo Fighters or the Dresden Dolls, but most people respect what they do as well. My hope is that this attack does not make the girls in AKB48 fear having to go out and perform. The only thing I can suggest is that they change up these meet and greets. Stop giving out tickets to these handshake events and their CDs, because that's why they keep rising to the charts. Instead, you know, do what a lot of bands do and hold a special event before the show for those who are willing to pay, say, an extra $20. I remember doing that for Apocalyptica many years ago, and I thought how they handled it was beyond fantastic. The band was interacting wonderfully with the fans, there were plenty of security people around to make sure nothing bad happened, and every person there had a huge smile on their face. Also, might I add that they perhaps decide on an age limit as to who can go to these events. You don't want any, like, creepy 30 to 40 year olds hanging out with girls who are still in middle and high school. You know, just a thought. Now, to prove that I hold no grudge towards AKB48, just this once, I'm gonna lift my pop idol group band so I can spin one of their songs. Think of it as my way of saying that I hope Rina and Anna have a very speedy recovery and return to the stage soon. I'll stay in familiar territory though, so I won't go super pop on your ears. The song I'm about to play is from the movie Wreck-It Ralph. So, here are AKB48 with the song, Sugar Rush.
Then go back to sleep.
Beats with the Shark Fighter coming from their High Five Soup album. I'm really crossing my fingers that there will be a third season of the Aquabat Super Show. If you want it to happen, please be sure to fill the Hub Network's mailbox with pleas for the TV show's rescue. Last week, I had finished watching a great anime series called Princess Jellyfish, where a girl and her fellow tenants try to save their apartment with the help of a really cool transvestite. After watching this show, I was going back and forth with our friend 42 Believer about it. Its writing, its characters, the music, just everything about Princess Jellyfish that was so fantastic. I then asked 42 Believer a question that has kept running through my mind ever since I tapped it, and I reckon it's still running through her mind as well. Why can't American shows be this well written? Now, I know that some of you fellow anime fans out there have had similar conversations with friends about a topic like this, but think seriously about it. Over in Japan, they are coming out with many anime and drama series with premises that are out of this world. They may seem a little ordinary, but then they add something to it that makes the show unique. There have been many a series about friends trying to save their home, but add a sassy and cool transvestite to the mix, and some awkward lovey-dovey moments, and you see what makes a show like Princess Jellyfish stand out from the rest of the pack. The same can be said about series like Ouran High School Host Club, Honey and Clover, Fullmetal Alchemist, and even Sergeant Frog, which in my book is just ALF times how many members of the Armpit Platoon there are. Then you've got thrillers like Future Diary and Psychopaths, and action shows like Soul Eater and Fairy Tail. All of these shows have something so cool, so outstanding, that they stand out from even the strongest of live-action American TV series. And what is usually shoved in our faces here in the States? Shows about guys trying to get laid, girls trying to find a man, families working out problems that have the most easiest of solutions but are dragged on for almost an hour. And Salmon Cat, my god, that is probably the dumbest fucking show I've ever seen. And the only reason why I know about Salmon Cat is because at PAX East it was on TV, but most of us were too drunk to switch the channel. But even when intoxicated, we knew how awful of a TV show it was. And speaking of other TV shows, reality TV shows, garbage, almost every one of them. And what happens when an American show tries to be a little quirky? Bam! Canceled after 4 episodes because they couldn't stretch that quirkiness out for an entire series due to lacking in ideas. And believe me, that well of quirkiness has dried out many years ago here in America. I feel like it's time America starts looking towards Japan for fresh ideas. Imagine a live-action version of Spice and Wolf, or Eden of the East, or Ranma One-Half. Yeah, I know they'd have to Americanize a couple of things here and there, but if they kept to the original story and not take away anything that made the original so special, it could very well work. So let me throw out a question for all you listeners out there this week. What anime, manga, or drama would you like to be seen turned into a live-action American TV series? Who would you cast? And how would you adapt it in such a way that it would be a hit in the U.S.? Let us know in the comments section on the official sites, our Facebook page, the B3 Tumblr, or write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. And we'll read off the best answers on a future episode. Coming up next, we've got Mummy the Peep Show with a track from their 2000 album, Electric Roller Girl. This ditty is called Girlfriend. calling location from her 2008 album Big Bang. Recently, she played the lead in Noboru Iguchi's latest film, Gothic Lolita Battle Bear. Find a trailer for it on YouTube. It looks really funny. Hopefully it'll come out in America really, really soon. I know I've said this many times in the past, but the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts is the most badass production company on the planet. Every year I do my best to check out at least three of their shows, and just about every time I've never been disappointed. Whether it's seeing Amanda Palmer as the MC in Cabaret, a brilliant one-man show about R. Buckminster Fuller, a Greek tragedy transformed into a rock opera by Serge Tankian, or Bryan Cranston as Lyndon B. Johnson trying to break down the walls of racial tensions, the ART has been home to some of the most memorable, once-in-a-lifetime productions that sometimes you won't see anywhere else. And folks, they've done it again with their recent production of William Shakespeare's The Tempest. In ART fashion, however, this was no ordinary adaptation of the Bard's work. No. Imagine the world of Prospero, Ariel, Caliban, and the rest of the characters set upon a stage in Coney Island. Next, take the music of the great Tom Waits and use it as the melodious backdrop of the story. Then, to make things more interesting, bring upon the silent half of Penn & Teller to not only co-direct the production with his friend Aaron Posner, but also bring to life some dazzling illusions and tricks that'll simply take your breath away. It all sounds too good to be true, yes? Well, guess what? It is true, and it's too good for the mere word. It's great. It's phenomenal. It just about takes away the title of the greatest show on earth from Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. And the cast was fantastic. Tom Nellis as Prospero brought forth a new level of mystique with his amazing tricks and staunch dialogue, delivering Shakespearean lines in a way that even non-English majors can fully understand. Nate Dendy was a wonder as the spirit Ariel, pulling off card tricks that would make you do a double take. Charlotte Graham and Joby Earle as the love-struck duo of Miranda and Ferdinand will make you cheer on for their love to be successful, even though they're only together for 3 hours before deciding to wed. Then again, 3 hours is a lifetime in Shakespeare's world. And lastly, it took two people who are just about joined to the hip to play Caliban, and they were Zachary Eisenstadt and Menelik Minifei, whom twisted their bodies together and spoke nearly in unison to bring Prospero's slave to the stage. Seriously, like the way that they bend their bodies up there, I wonder if they need massages after each performance, like whomever plays the title role in The Elephant Man whenever they do that play. One other group of actors that need to be mentioned were the four people making up Rough Magic, the band playing the Tom Waits songs during the production. Misha Brandon, Michael Brune, Shayna Taub, and Nate Talker. Seriously, like when this production ends, these four need to stick together and make their own band and write their own songs. They were like beyond great. I know Shayna Taub has her own music, which you can check out at www.shainataub.com. But the energy they brought to Waits' music was like incredible. So, for those in the Boston area, please do yourselves a favor and check out The Tempest at the Loeb Drama Center in Cambridge. It's playing until June 15th, and I don't think it'll be seen on this earth again after it's finished, unless they decide to bring it to Broadway, which they totally should do. I was reading online that there are rumors that they may bring it to DC, so that would be great for those living in the capital. The ART has also announced the productions for the 2014 and 2015 season, which include Finding Neverland, a new American opera, an apocalyptic vaudeville, and a few others. Even if you're not theater people, these shows are worthy of your attention. Take my word for it, please. Now let's get back to some music. Frank Turner is back with a brand new band called Mongol Horde, a hardcore punk group with a good sense of humor. From their self-titled debut album, This song is called Tapeworm Uprising.
Delegation, no kind of overweight, attack behind the eyes, smoke away.
instrumental rocker's toe with Mukogishi ga Shiro Yume. That comes off of their 2005 album, The Book About My Idle Plot on a Vague Anxiety. Last year, they released a live DVD recorded during their European tour called 8 Days DVD, so be sure to check out that if you can. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you are in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBastardBrigade. And don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and The Issues Program. So, next week, I have no idea what I'm going to be planning for a podcast show. I know when I get back from E3, there will hopefully be an episode featuring all the interviews I've conducted with everyone at the convention, but for next week, I'm not so sure. Perhaps I'll do just a show with all music and no talk, as I'll be busy preparing for E3, or I may try something a little different. Well, not different, but something out of the ordinary. Or I may try, you know, I may just not do a show at all. We'll have to see what time allows us to do. However, please be sure to check out egmnow.com/Electric Sisterhood for all the latest E3 reporting from myself and Ninja Sista. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope that you'll enjoy our take on the gaming event of the year. We're going to end the show today with some Chat Monchi. Those familiar with the anime Princess Jellyfish, the one I mentioned earlier on in the show, will recognize this one immediately. From their album, Awakom, this is Kokodaki no Hanashi. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps. 今から歌うこと、ここだけの話。